Good morning.
Good morning.
Hope everyone is doing well this morning. We're in the middle of a series called Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, in which we are looking at three specific people in the Bible whose lives teach us some things about God and about us and about how God deals with people like us. And the person that we've been focusing on lately is a guy named Jacob. So this morning, we're going to again look at the life of Jacob. And today, we're going to be looking at a large portion of Jacob's life. It's over 20 years long. But the place that we're going to begin is in Genesis chapter 35. So if you have a Bible with you, you can open up to Genesis chapter 35. That's where we're going to be looking at today, Genesis 35. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in the racks in front of you. If not, we'll put all the scriptures up on the screen for you. But last week, I told you a story about how seeing a smudge on a baseboard led me to clean all the baseboards in my entire house. And this week I got a lot of messages from people saying that they went home and started looking at their baseboards. So did you take a second glance at any of the baseboards in your house this week? Hopefully every time that you look at a baseboard now, you'll be reminded of what we talked about last week. That when it comes to baseboards, you may not notice a little bit of dust. And once you get used to a little bit of dust, you might not notice a little bit more, and then a little bit more. And then one day, you'll take a rag and wipe your baseboards and say to yourself, how in the world did I let it get like this? How did I not notice this before? Well, it's because little things, when left unattended over time, incrementally turn into bigger things. And not only is that true of dirty baseboards, it's also true of our spiritual lives as well. Last week in our study of Jacob, we came to an event where God gave Jacob a wake-up call in his spiritual life. And the reason that Jacob needed a wake-up call was because Jacob had allowed some little things to creep into his spiritual life. And these little things, as harmless as they may seem, when they are left unattended or unaddressed, they can turn into bigger things, things that get in the way of us depending on God. So God gave Jacob this wake-up call in order for him to take inventory of his spiritual life and address whatever it is that might have been getting in between he and God. And in the same way, we too were given an opportunity to take a look at our own lives and see if there were any little things that we have allowed to slip in between ourselves and God. And it's important that we remember that these wake-up calls, they are given to us by God out of love. God didn't come to Jacob in anger saying, hey, Jacob, you need to clean up your life or else. A lot of times that is the picture of God that we might have adopted, that he's always sneaking around looking over our shoulder, trying to catch us doing something. But God actually came to Jacob gently and lovingly. God came to Jacob saying, Jacob, you need to remember what it was like. Jacob, you need to remember all that I have done in your past. And in Jacob's wake-up call, Jacob remembered that throughout his entire life, God had always been the God who had answered him in the day of distress and had been with him wherever he has gone. Now, I think that the reason that God gave Jacob this wake-up call, the reason that God called Jacob to take a look at his spiritual life, was not to scare Jacob, but was to actually prepare him. Because at the beginning of Genesis chapter 35, when God called Jacob, things were going pretty well in his life, but all of that is about to change. And I think God was calling Jacob back to him because God knew, hey, Jacob, things in your life are about to get really difficult. And in order for you to get through this next part, you are going to need me more than you've ever needed me before. So, Jacob, you need to get your spiritual life in order, and you need to remember that I am the God who answers you in your distress, because there is some distress coming your way, Jacob. And you need to remember that I am the God who is with you wherever you go, because when this distress comes, it might not feel like it, Jacob. Now, Jacob had no idea of the distress that was about to come into his life, just like you and I don't know about the distress that comes into our life before it comes. Usually when distress comes into our life, it feels like it comes out of nowhere. And it would be nice if we could get a little heads up about when the hard stuff was going to come into our life, right? Because then we could prepare for it. But knowing myself and how I operate, if I knew the details of my future, I would not prepare for the hard stuff. I would do everything in my power to avoid it. Because I already tried to do that, and I don't even know the details of my future. Sometimes my prayers, if you were to boil them down and take all the churchy language out of them, sometimes my prayers actually sound like this. Dear God, thank you so much for everything that you've done for me. And if I could ask you for one more small thing, would you please not allow anything scary or difficult or remotely uncomfortable to ever come into my life again? Thanks a bunch. Amen. Does anybody else prayers sound like that sometimes? Maybe that's why God doesn't tell us what's going to happen in our future, because we might try and avoid it. Instead, what God does is he prepares us for what lies ahead. But his preparation often sounds like this, reminding us, whatever happens in your life, remember, I hear you, I am with you, and I am for you. This is the kind of preparation that God gave to Jacob in Genesis chapter 35, and this is the same kind of preparation that God gives to us as well. And Jacob is going to need this kind of preparation for what happens in the next part of his life. And the next part of Jacob's life begins like this. During his journey to Bethel, we read this in chapter 35. It says, "And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried under an oak below Bethel." Now, this event is described matter-of-factly here in one sentence, but surely it would have been a significant loss in Jacob's life. Deborah was the nurse of Rebekah, his mother. And nurse might not be the best word for us to understand Deborah's relationship to this family. You see, all the way back when Jacob's mother, Rebekah, was a young woman, Rebekah left her homeland and everything that she knew, and she moved to live in the house of Abraham in order to marry Abraham's son, Isaac. And Rebekah left everything in her life behind her, and the only thing that came with her was Deborah, her nurse. So Deborah lived in the house of Abraham with Rebekah, and surely Deborah heard all the stories about the God of Abraham. Deborah knew all about how Isaac was the miracle son who was born to a barren woman in her 90s. Deborah was right there when the same son, Isaac, married her maiden, Rebekah. Deborah was there for all the years when Rebekah herself was barren. And then Deborah was there when Rebekah finally got pregnant. And when Rebekah gave birth to two twin boys, Jacob and Esau, Deborah helped raise those boys. So imagine Deborah as the one putting little Jacob to sleep at night. And then when these boys grew up and the family tension caused Jacob to run away, at some point Deborah was sent to live with Jacob. And for Jacob, Deborah was probably that reminder of home. Deborah was that extension of his own mother, whom he never got to see again. Deborah was that constant fixture all throughout Jacob's life. And now here, Deborah dies. Can you see how the death of Deborah is more than just the loss of a loved one? It's like the end of an era. Just last week, I celebrated a birthday, and it dawned on me that when you were younger, birthdays are something that you look forward to. Like, I couldn't wait until I was 16, until I was 18, until I was 21. But then at some point, birthdays stop being something that you look forward to, and they start being markers of just how fast life is passing you by, right? Now, I know you're going to send me an email that says, "Dusty, wait till you get to be my age." Or maybe because you are your age, you won't send me an email. It'll be a handwritten letter with real stamps on it. But isn't it true that there are certain events in our lives that cause us to think about the times that have passed? Events that remind us of how fast life goes and how quickly things change. And I think for Jacob, Deborah's death was just that. I bet Deborah's passing was a nostalgic event for Jacob. Had him thinking about all the things in his past and how much things have changed over the years. And for Jacob, burying Deborah was almost like burying a part of his own past. But Deborah, she lived a good long life. So her passing was probably not a huge shock. But sometimes there are things that happen in life that are a huge shock. Sometimes there are things that knock us off of our feet, that turn our world upside down, that leave us reeling. Well, shortly after Deborah's passing, Jacob faces one of these kind of events. In verse 16, it says, "Rachel went into labor, and she had hard labor. And when her labor was at its hardest, The midwife said to her, "Do not fear, for you have another son." And as her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. Now again, Genesis records this event briefly without detail, but can you imagine what this event must have been like for Jacob? Imagine as they're traveling in the caravan, he gets word from behind that something is not right with his pregnant wife, Rachel. And as he reaches her, the midwives tell them that the baby is coming. And babies don't wait for the perfect moment. Babies come when they come, and this baby is coming right now. So maybe they set up one of the tents, and Rachel begins her labor. And it says that it was a hard labor, probably hours and hours of excruciating pain without the medical advancements that we have today. And Jacob spends the day going in and out of that tent, anxiously waiting for the baby to be born. And then as the delivery is taking place, something goes terribly wrong. And the midwives know it, and Rachel knows it, and soon enough Jacob knows it. And shortly thereafter it becomes apparent that nothing can be done to fix this situation. Rachel is not going to survive. And the midwives do what they can to offer her comfort. And everybody scrambles for some kind of encouraging word to say in these last moments. And maybe Jacob is right there, holding Rachel's hand, looking into the eyes of the woman that he loves the most as she breathes her last. What do you think must have been like for Jacob in that moment? Do you think he woke up that morning expecting the day to end like this? I imagine Jacob was probably in shock, seeing his entire life turn upside down in the blink of an eye. Now, maybe we haven't experienced exactly what Jacob is going through here, but maybe you understand what it's like to have your life turned upside down in the blink of an eye. To wake up one morning, and by the time you go to bed that night, your life will never be the same again. Maybe it was the loss of a loved one. Maybe it was the loss of a relationship. Maybe it was the loss of a job or a dream. Maybe it was the loss of your health or your future. But that loss came into your life suddenly, and it changed everything. Do you know what that feels like? Because that's where Jacob must have been with the loss of his wife, Rachel. But again, I don't think that it's any coincidence that God came to Jacob before he went through these painful parts of his life to prepare him for these exact moments by reminding him that even when it hurts, even when it doesn't feel like it, even when life is suddenly turned upside down, no matter what happens, Jacob, you need to know that God hears you, God is with you, and God is for you. I wonder if while Jacob was going through all of this, he was constantly reminding himself of all of those truths about God that were rekindled during his wake-up call. That God hears him in his distress, and God is with him through everything that he goes through. I don't know about you, but for me, it's comforting to know that like Jacob, God hears me when I call out to him in my distress. And it's comforting for me to know that God is with me through everything that I go through. And not only does God hear me, and not only is God with me, but God is also for me. God cares about what's happening in my life, and in your life, and in Jacob's life. There's this passage in the Psalms that describes God like this. It says, "You keep track of all my sorrows. You have collected all my tears in your bottle. You have recorded each one in your book." God knows every hurt. He hears every cry. He has collected every tear that we have ever spilled, and he hasn't missed a single one. I don't know about you, but that is comforting for me to know that God cares this much about the happenings of my life. And maybe it was equally comforting for Jacob to know that every single tear that ran down his face was collected by a God who cares for him deeply. Now, as Jacob picked up the pieces of his life, maybe there came a time when his little son, Joseph, started asking about mommy. And maybe every time Jacob looked at little Joseph, he saw Rachel. Maybe Joseph had those same familiar features. Maybe he had Rachel's eyes, or her nose, or her smile. And since Joseph was the first child that he had with Rachel, maybe Jacob looked at Joseph a little bit differently. Maybe Jacob treated Joseph a little bit differently. Maybe Joseph was Jacob's reminder of the love of his life, Rachel. And as the years went on and Joseph got older, maybe Jacob knew that it probably wasn't the best idea to play favorites with his kids. Because Jacob knew from experience that his own parents played favorites with he and his brother. And it caused all kinds of problems and huge messes between he and his brother Esau that lasted their entire life. But maybe Jacob, even though he knew it, he couldn't help himself. Because there was just something about Joseph that reminded him of Rachel. And maybe at first, he tried to be discreet about it. Joseph gets an extra cookie after dinner. Joseph doesn't have to do the same amount of chores that his older brothers have to do. Joseph always gets away with a warning and never actually gets grounded. You know how it is with younger siblings, right? You set the pace with the oldest child. You lay out the rules and you enforce the consequences with the oldest child. But the second child, they get away with a little bit more, right? And then if you have a third child, they get away with even more than that. And then if you have four or five children, you consider it a parenting win if you just don't forget one of them somewhere, right? Well, Joseph, he was number 11. And the rules didn't seem to apply to Joseph the same way that they did to all of his brothers. And older brothers, they notice this kind of thing, and they don't forget. And as Joseph got older, Jacob got less discreet about his favoritism. Like giving a fancy coat of many colors to Joseph that he didn't give to any of the other brothers. Chapter 37 says, "Now Jacob loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors." Now how do you think the other brothers are going to react to that? Not good, right? It says, "But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him." Now, Joseph isn't exactly innocent in all this. Maybe all the years of being treated like a favorite blinded him to just how much his brothers resented him. But Joseph didn't help his cause any by announcing to all of his brothers that he's been having dreams lately. Verse 5 says, "Now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more." The gist of the dream was, "Hey brothers, I had a dream and you're all in it. One day all of you are going to bow down before me." Now if you read the story, Jacob knew that this was not going to sit well with the brothers. So Jacob pulled Joseph aside and rebuked him. He said, "Joseph, you got to stop sharing these dreams with your brothers, okay? No more dreams. It is not a good idea. It is not going to end well for you." But little did Jacob or Joseph know that the sharing of a dream was going to end in a nightmare. The next 13 chapters in the book of Genesis are going to focus on the life of Joseph. And a few years ago, I did a sermon series on the life of Joseph. It's up on the website if you want to go and listen to all the details about the life of Joseph. But instead of following the life of Joseph this morning, I want to look at the happenings of the next few years from the perspective of Jacob, the father. And here's how the next few years begin from Jacob's point of view. One day, Jacob's older sons were out in the fields tending to the herds. So Jacob called his younger son Joseph in and said to him, "Go now, see if it's well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word to me." So Joseph went and did as his father had commanded, and Jacob probably didn't think twice about this. And the boys with their flocks, they could be gone for days at a time. And Jacob probably wasn't alarmed at all until one day his sons returned, but there was only 10 of them, not 11. And the looks on their faces, may have told Jacob that something wasn't right. And as Jacob asked, "Where is Joseph?" nobody initially spoke up. So he asked again, "Hey, where's Joseph? Where is my son Joseph?" And reluctantly, the brothers, they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not." And Jacob identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son Joseph for many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. But Jacob refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Can you imagine what this moment has been like for Jacob? They say a parent should never have to bury their child. And Jacob doesn't even get that option. There is no body. Jacob is convinced that his son is dead. And the reality is so devastatingly painful that he is also convinced that he will never be able to get over this. He is convinced that nothing good will ever come from this. Jacob refused to be comforted and said, "This mourning will last for the rest of my entire life." Have you ever had something happen in your life where you were convinced that you would never get over this? That nothing good could ever come out of this? That the pain that you were feeling in that moment, you were convinced that it was going to last forever? That is where Jacob is. And sure, Jacob knows that God hears him and God is with him and God is for him. Jacob has learned and experienced all of that before. But isn't it true that sometimes you can know all the right answers but still convince yourself that your situation is different? That your situation is too bad, it's too broken, it's too painful for it to ever be fixed. And as you fill up bottles and bottles with your tears, it feels like comfort and healing and joy are miles away from you. I wonder what Jacob's prayers were like during this season of his life. If he's anything like me, then they'd probably be filled with pain and questions. "God, I thought you said you hear me. God, I thought you said that you were with me. God, I thought you said that you cared. Then why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you stop this? Why did you allow this to happen?" Have you ever wondered those kind of questions in the middle of your pain? Maybe in Jacob's pain, he had convinced himself that his situation was different. That his situation was too bad, that his situation was too painful, that he could never be comforted. Maybe in his pain, Jacob cried out to God and said, "God, it's different. This is different. I will never get over this. You don't understand. You don't know what it's like to lose a son." But little did Jacob know that the same God who has collected every tear that Jacob ever shed knows exactly what it's like to lose a son. Because God himself lost a son when Jesus was crucified on the cross for the sins of the world. So God knows what it's like to see the robe that his son used to wear be covered in blood. God knows what it's like to watch his own son suffer immeasurable pain. God knows what it's like to watch his own son breathe his last breath. God knows what it's like to see his own son placed in a tomb. So Jacob, even in the worst pain of your life, God knows exactly what you are going through. And still, he hears you, he is with you, and he is for you. But Jacob, here's what you need to know about the God who has been collecting all of your tears. Not only does this God know what it's like to bury a son, this God knows what it's like to empty a tomb. Because on the cross, as Jesus, the Son of God, died, those who were closest to Jesus looked at his death on the cross and thought, God, where are you? God, why aren't you stopping this? God, why are you allowing this to happen? And as they watched Jesus be crucified, they all thought, God, surely nothing good can come from this. And then 3 days later, when the tomb of Jesus was found to be empty, it became apparent to everybody that even when it seems like certain death to us, when the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is involved, even death can be brought back to life. What the resurrection of Jesus from the dead teaches all of us about this God is that we can't see everything that God is doing. And sometimes from our vantage point, all that we can see is pain and hurt and loss. And we cannot even fathom how anything good can come out of this, when at the same exact time, we could very well be looking at God's greatest act for our good. Because isn't it true that the death of God's Son on the cross was actually bringing salvation to us? Well, in the same way, Jacob would come to learn that through the death of his son, Joseph, God was actually bringing salvation to him as well. Many years passed after Jacob lost his son Joseph, probably decades. And I'm sure in those years, Jacob carried on with his life, but that pain probably never went away. And from Jacob's perspective, his life might feel like pain after pain after pain. And then, as if things could not get any worse, a famine hits the entire region. A famine that is so great that his family's survival is in jeopardy. So Jacob said, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. And you know, when the brothers get to Egypt, they encounter this young ruler who deals with them harshly. And they go back and forth between Egypt and home, and these encounters with this young ruler become more and more stressful and more tense. And every time Jacob sends his son to Egypt, they seem to come back with more and more bad news. But Jacob knows that they're not going to make it unless he sends them down to Egypt again. So Jacob sends his sons one last time to Egypt, not knowing if he will ever see them again. And then one day, he spots a caravan on the horizon. It's his sons returning from Egypt. And these same sons, who decades earlier stood before him and delivered the news to their father that his son Joseph was dead, have now arrived with news of another kind. And they told him, Joseph is still alive. And he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. Dad, Joseph is still alive. And he is ruler over all the land in Egypt. Dad, Joseph is alive. And he is the ruler over all the land in Egypt. Now, if you want to know all the specifics as to how Joseph is alive and not dead, you can go back and read all those chapters yourself or listen to that series online. But from the perspective of Jacob, the story of his life ends like this. The son who was thought to be dead is now alive. And more than that, he is revealed to be a king who has the power to save his people from certain death. Now, does that story sound familiar? It seems that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has been bringing salvation from what appears to be death for a very long time. And if you go back and read the details of the story, Joseph, who was thought to be dead, is now by the power and plan of God, the second in command in all of Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world. And the 11 sons of Jacob, who were about to be wiped out by a famine, are now living in the choicest, most prosperous part of Egypt, now as the 12 sons of Israel. But there is a passage in chapter 46, where Jacob has just heard that Joseph is still alive, and he's packed up his things, and he's on his way to meet Joseph for the first time, and on the travel, Jacob stops to offer sacrifices and to worship God. And God spoke to Israel and said, "Jacob, Jacob, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt." Now, normally, I hate it when I'm wrong about something and somebody gets an opportunity to tell me, "I told you so." But if I were Jacob, this would be the sweetest sounding "I told you so" you could ever hear. When God says, "Jacob, I told you so. I told you that I hear you. I told you that I am with you. I told you that I am for you. You just couldn't see it. So I'm going to go with you down to Egypt, just like I have been with you every single moment beforehand." And in Egypt, when Jacob wraps his arm around his son Joseph, he looked back on his life, and he could clearly see now what he could not see before. That every step, every hurt, every tear, every cry, God heard him, God was with him, and God was for him in such a way where even the greatest pains of his life were used for his good. Did you see that in the life of Jacob? Now I pray that for some of us in this room, one day we'll get to celebrate together an "I told you so" moment like Jacob's, where all the pain and the hurt and the tears that seem to consume your life right now will one day, looking back, highlight an intricate and loving display of all the ways that God was able to weave all of that pain for your good. Because what the life of Jacob should teach us is that even right now, in your pain, God hears you, God is with you, and God is for you. And even if you can't see it right now, one day we will be able to look back and hear God say, "I told you so." Because if God can use the apparent death of Joseph to save a people from a famine, and if God can use the actual death of Jesus to save all people from their sin, then that same God is more than able to use what seems like death in your life right now to bring life into your future that you might not be able to comprehend at the moment. So hang on and know that God hears you, He is with you, and God is for you. Do you believe that this morning? Let me pray for us. God, we thank you that you are a God who hears us in our distress. We thank you that even when we can't see it, you are a God who is with us in every single thing that we go through. And God, we thank you that you are for us, that you care. That you care so much that it says that every tear that we cry, every pain that we go through, every hurt that we've ever felt, you've recorded every single one and you haven't missed. God, we know and find comfort in the fact that all of our pain and all of our hurt, you are collecting to one day make right, to redeem it. And God, we know that you can do this. We know that you can bring good things out of bad situations. We know that you can bring life out of death because we've seen it. That when we look at the cross, what we see is the death. What we see is loss. What we see is Jesus dying. But what we are actually looking at was the unfolding of the greatest act that you ever did on our behalf. That from that death, you rose Jesus from the dead and gave us new life out of the death of our sin. God, we thank you that you are a God that can bring life from death. And God, we thank you that you are a God who even now, in the parts of our lives that feel like death, in the parts of our lives that are hurt and pain and loss, we know that even then one day we can look back and see that you are able to even bring good out of that. So God, as we wait and as we hurt, we cling to you knowing that you hear us in our distress and you are with us every step of the way. And even when we can't feel it or see it, we know that you are for us. We pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.